Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Poet Dylan Thomas was a rascal and a rogue and a magician with language. Of himself, he said, 1, I'm a Welshman. 2, I'm a drunkard. 3, I'm a lover of the human race, especially of women. He was born in 1914, died at 39 in 1953. Famously wrote Under Milk Wood, Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night, Fern Hill, and many more, including the humble, touching prose poem, A Child's Christmas in Wales. Here he is reciting from that in 1952.
It was snowing. It was always snowing at Christmas. December, in my memory, as white as Lapland, although there were no reindeers. But there were cats.
Cats and much more in the childhood Christmas of Dylan Thomas. A new theatrical adaptation brings a story to the poem and the poem to the stage. This hour On Point, a Christmas Eve conversation with the playwright, director, and cast members of the stage adaptation of Dylan Thomas's A Child's Christmas in Wales. You can join the conversation. Do you know this poet, this poem? Is it part of the Christmas season at your house? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's hear a little more of Dylan Thomas reciting his own A Child's Christmas in Wales.
One Christmas was so much like the other in those years around the Seatown corner now. Out of all sound except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep. That I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and 6 nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6.
Dylan Thomas, the man himself in 1952, his prose poem, A Child's Christmas in Wales, lives on and now on stage. Joining me now in the studio is Burgess Clark. He's the executive artistic director of the Boston Children's Theater. He's the playwright and director behind this adaptation, which was a collaboration between the Boston Playwrights Theater and the Boston Children's Theater. A Child's Christmas in Wales finished its run last night. Burgess Clark, welcome.
Thank you, Tom.
Congratulations. I saw it. Wonderful show. And with us in the studio are several members of the cast of A Child's Christmas in Wales. Stephen Libby plays the adult Dylan Thomas, and very well, I should say. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
We're also joined by Margaret Ann Brady, who plays Thomas's mother. Margaret Ann, good to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
And we have Stephen Gagliastro, who plays Thomas's father. Welcome to you as well, Stephen.
Thanks for having us.
We are going to hear in a few minutes from Adam Freeman, the young Adam Freeman, who plays the young Dylan Thomas, and also Megan Hawks, who plays Auntie Dosie, a creation, Burgess Clark, of this adaptation. There are a lot of ants, but no Auntie Dosie in the original. What were you going for with your adaptation here?
Well, I was going for a universal message of everyone's family. I mean, I think that there's a reason that Dylan Thomas's work continues to resonate as strongly now as it did even during his lifetime. And it's because of the universal message. Many of us have never been to Wales, and yet we feel as though we have after we've read his poem.
It's full of vignettes and moments, sort of snatched like wisps of memory. You pick up on that. But in A Child's Christmas in Wales, there is not exactly something that you have provided here. There is not exactly a story.
That's true. And I remember when I was first approached about doing the adaptation 7 years ago, it was a little daunting to me because I remembered having loved the poem as a child, and I wanted to do it justice. And then when I started to actually deconstruct it of how I was going to make it a worthy and dynamic piece of theater, that I began to realize that it was a pretty large task that was looming before me, because there is no through line, there is no plot.
But you've made one, and we'll talk about it. Stephen Libby, I mean, something else exceptional in your case here is that you have to compete with very vivid recordings of the man himself, who people who know and love this poem may well have heard, when you stand on stage in the adaptation and represent him in the flesh.
That's true, but I think that for this adaptation, we've been focusing more on the man as he would appear in conversation, the man as he would appear in personal recollection, and less in the sort of recitative style of the time.
I want to dive right in and begin to hear it. We're going to have some scenes from the new adaptation of A Child's Christmas in Wales. Burgess Clark, can you introduce the first one? And we'll dive right in. Thespians at the ready.
Absolutely. This is the opening of the show, which I know that many Dylan Thomas fans out there will recognize as being lifted from the poem.
Burgess Clark's opening of A Child's Christmas in Wales.
Years and years ago, when I was a boy, when there were wolves in Wales and birds the colour of red flannel petticoats whisked past the harp-shaped hills, when we sang and wallowed all night and day in caves that smelt like Sunday afternoons in the damp front farmhouse parlours, and we chased with the jawbones of deacons the English and the bears, before the motor car, before the wheel, before the Duchess-faced horse, when we rode the duffed and happy hills bareback, it snowed and snowed.
Dylan, it matters not. The subject is snow.
It is always snowing at Christmas.
As heavy and wet as one of your Auntie Bessie's kicks.
December, in my memory, is white as Lapland, though there were no reindeers. I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and six nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. Mistletoe hung from the gas brackets in all the front parlours. There was sherry and walnuts and bottled beer and crackers by the dessert spoons. And cats in their furabouts watched the fires and the high-heaped fire spat, all ready for the chestnuts and the mulling pokers. And music. Men and women wading or scooping back from chapel with taproom noses and wind-bust cheeks, all albinos, huddles their stiff, black, jarring feathers against the irreligious snow. Yes, it is Christmas Eve in Wales. My world, or what I'd come to know of it, is number 5 Cwm Donkin Drive, a small, undistinguished cottage on a long white hill, seeping down to the sea in a jum-tumble of houses, all the others very much like our humbled own. It is 1923. It is Christmas Eve in Wales. My father is the senior master of English at Atan Elementary School, a wordish sort, as the ladies of the neighbourhood used to say, in crystal reverence, a nod usually endowed only the vicar. He loves Keats and Shelley and William Shakespeare, and smells of leather and pipe smoke, though he didn't smoke, and, oddly enough, raspberries. I don't know why.
Hello? Anyone home?
The Christmas tree has been selected, rejected, and selected again, finally to be decided upon once and for absolutely by my father, who had gotten chilled. Now he is busy with the temporary task of being Father Christmas, dragging the quivering tree uphill through several snows, my sister and I trailing along with all the pomp and authority of a judge, sure that of the bunch we'd got the best one.
Now, Peter, I've just finished the dusting up. You'll not track snow into the parlour.
Do I ever?
Frequently, I'm afraid. Where are the children?
Buried in a snowbank, I hope.
Peter.
They're right behind me. Huh? Oh. Well, I'm sure they're about.
Dull, Nance, it's almost dark. Inside.
My mother is a study of a woman in lace collars and men's sweaters. With neat shoes and soft hands, she balances my father's sour muddle with flashing eyes and sharp laughter.
DG, off with the overshoes.
Don't carry on so, Dove. It's Christmas.
It's Christmas, and indeed it is. There in Burgess Clark's adaptation of Dylan Thomas's A Child's Christmas in Wales, Stephen Libby as Dylan Thomas, Margaret Ann Brady as his mother, Stephen Gagliastro as the father, and Welsh accents all around. Where did you find that, Stephen?
We had a fantastic dialect coach by the name of Christine Hamill, and I personally didn't have to do a Welsh accent to the degree that the others did. Dylan, of course, changed his accent as he grew up and got what is known as received pronunciation.
Yes, right, right.
All country boys get when they go away to school.
And Stephen Gagliastro, you appear in this show, even though in the prose poem, Dad is nowhere around, but you're the curmudgeonly father on the scene complaining about pagan rituals.
I am, in fact. That's quite a recurring subject, as The visuals of the play are me dragging I would say it's about a 10-foot Christmas
yes,
tree.
At least, yeah.
which weighs about 60 pounds for those who saw it.
And not too happy about it.
No, and so from place to place to place to place, arguing and curmudgeoning all the way.
Yeah, and Margaret Ann, you've got Dylan Thomas, young Dylan Thomas there, Dill, as you call him right there, and you're the mother, loving him up. Maybe love he longed for later in life.
Yes, and it's really beautiful to have the relationship both with young Dull and my grown son simultaneously on the stage.
Because Burgess Clark, that's exactly what you've arranged. You've got Stephen Libby as the grown Dylan Thomas kind of strolling around almost as if a spirit or a ghost through the actors in that 1923 moment in time.
That's true, and I think of him as conjuring the scene for us, that he's living it at the same time that he's painting the picture for us.
Wow, it's great fun, and occasionally even interacting with him. Most of the time he's unseen to your actors in character, but once in a while you sort of step in and correct a date or a perception or a memory, or they his.
Absolutely. They debate these things back and forth, as I've often seen when people do when they're recalling something together. They will argue over a specific detail or take issue with a particular point, and you know, each thinks that they're correct. And so I've allowed that in the theatricality of this piece, that they can actually argue with him and disagree.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking on this Christmas Eve about Welsh poet Dylan Thomas and his sweet, wonderful prose poem, A Child's Christmas in Wales, brought to stage by playwright and director Burgess Clark. Here's a little more of Dylan Thomas himself, recalling not just one memory of a Christmas past, but several, which mix up together in a series of different moments throughout this poem, evoking feelings of nostalgia and joy. Here he is from a 1952 recording, the poet himself.
All the Christmases roll down towards the two-tongued sea like a cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street. And they stop at the rim of the ice-edged, fish-freezing waves, and I plunge my hands in the snow and bring out whatever I can find. In goes my hand into that wool-white, bell-tongued ball of holidays resting at the rim of the carol-singing sea. And out come Mrs. Prothero and the firemen.
Poet Dylan Thomas in 1952, in goes my hand into that wool-white, bell-tongued ball of holidays resting at the rim of the carol-singing sea. And who doesn't know the nostalgia for holidays past? We're talking with the playwright and director of A Child's Christmas in Wales, as brought to stage by the Boston Children's Theatre and Boston Playwrights Theatre, Burgess Clark. Stephen Libby plays Dylan Thomas as he wanders across the stage in this production. He's with us now, as in Margaret Ann Brady, who plays Dylan Thomas's mother, and with us now, 9-year-old Adam Friedman, who plays the young Dylan Thomas. Hi, Adam. Thanks very much for being here. Well, you can say hi. We're on radio.
Hi.
Hi. It's wonderful to have you. What is it, you've done it every night for weeks. Was it fun?
Yeah, it was very fun.
And how about the accent? Was it weird, hard, difficult, or not?
Well, it felt kind of weird, like, saying it, but after a while, you kind of got used to it.
Well, I thought you did a marvelous job. It's really great to have you with us, and we're going to hear more from the play. Burgess Clark, give us a sense of what the challenge was in bringing this to stage. What were you up against? How did you begin to think about it?
Well, the thing to remember is that these are two different mediums. One is to be read, the other is to be performed. So my challenge is ultimately to create something that's interesting and dynamic and engaging for an audience. And, you know, let's not forget that Dylan Thomas is, the original, is known for its brevity. It's very, very brief.
Yeah. I mean, it's only, what I mean,
it's 3,000 words, I think,
it's
is
just
the total.
A few pages.
It's a prose poem, and yet to make a 90-minute piece of theater out of that, you sort of have to take a few liberties.
It's been made into a book. It was originally just a reading on air, I think, some things he pulled together, made into a book by dint of illustrations added to flesh it out.
That's correct, yes, yes.
And as we said earlier, no story. We've got people already on the phone conjecturing about how you may have, what gel you may have added to this. Let's get one of them. Somerset, Ohio. Doug, you're on the air with playwright Burgess Clark.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wanting to ask Mr. Clark, along the theme of the universality of, or along the idea of the universality of the themes, what might have been some of the childhood memories of his own that would help him craft this wonderful show?
Ah, you put your finger right on the magic ring here. You've done just that, Burgess Clark.
Yes,
you brought a memory of your own. You added it, and to do what? What was it?
Well, you know, I didn't. You know, Dylan Thomas was long gone before I was even born, and so I have to make a connection as one artist to another. I have to make a connection between these two voices, and in doing so, I recognized something about himself, which was that his discovery as himself as a writer came around just about the same time it did for me. And when I was 9 years
old... That is quite young.
It is very young,
His father was an English teacher.
That's
he did read Shakespeare to him when he was two. Dylan Thomas reciting Shakespeare by the time he was four and writing and becoming creative very early in life.
He came very... And, you know, he was a very sickly child. He was often removed. He spent a lot of his time personally with books. And I recognized that, you know, that there was a parallel, and there was one pivotal Christmas gift that was given to me when I was 9 years old by my Aunt Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed like a very natural story to weave into A Child's Christmas in Wales.
And that gift, is it too much for us to say what it was?
No, I don't think so. It will be revealed when we read the scenes.
Good,
so.
because it's a book of blank pages.
That's
book
correct.
Which is a kind of, in the play, maybe in your life as well, a kind of standing invitation.
Yes.
To come on out and be what this one sort of spinsterish aunt perceives he is.
That's correct. It's I think that every child, you know, needs someone's support, needs someone to recognize who they are and to encourage and nurture that. And that's what my Aunt Charlotte did for me, and so that's why I allow Aunt Dosie to do that for young Dylan as 9 years old in A Child's Christmas in Wales.
He was kind of a sickly child, kind of a difficult child, left mm-hmm. school early, went to work for the newspaper in Wales, was in London, was still in his teens, and became kind of a sensation for this unbelievable effulgence of language that came from him.
Absolutely.
And then all these kind of rough and ragged rascal years, a lot of drinking, a lot of womanizing, lot of tough life that put him on the downside quickly. And you have him here as Stephen Libby playing him as an adult, kind of looking back to the humble simplicity
Absolutely.
Of these modest means Christmas years for meaning, for where it all started.
Absolutely. He's a child, you know, that he's ultimately, in my view, he is an optimist. And I think he's looking back to that one pivotal Christmas and trying to recapture it for himself, as we all do when we read A Child's Christmas in Wales, when we go to see a theater production of it. We are trying to recapture something. That Christmas brings out the children in all of us.
Let's get a call from Elizabeth in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was excited about this topic because it brings back nostalgia for me. My son, who's 33 now and just married last year, and I used to go to the Lyric stage production in Boston of A Child's Christmas in Wales.
Yes,
they did
yes.
it for many years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And then some outlying theater groups did it. And we hadn't been for a few years, and he's off on his own and married now. So I bought him a picture book of The Child's Christmas in Wales, and hoping it'll bring back memories for him, and maybe he'll pass it on to his son.
Do you know what I mean by the simplicity of it, Elizabeth? It's not a fancy Christmas. It's very homespun, sort of down in the family weeds.
And I think it's simple enough that you can impart your own memories. You can put your own memories in there and mix it all up and get that warm, fuzzy, nostalgic feeling, you know, and it's down to earth enough, the curmudgeonly father and you know, the
yes.
comments about the various relatives. It's down to earth enough that you can identify with that. So I think that's what's kept it in our lives.
That's wonderful to hear, that wild and wonderful language, but a very, very kind of humble scene. We're going to hear another scene right here. We now have the young Dylan Thomas, 9-year-old Adam Freeman, with us as well. Burgess Clark, set this scene up for us. This comes a little later in the play.
Yes.
We get to a part where he's thinking about gifts, of course, important to children, delivered to the house by a postman. And what's going on here?
Well, this is after he's received all the gifts that are cited in the poem, you know, the celluloid duck and all of these, the jelly babies, everything else. And
Dylan Thomas goes through one of his...
He loves
recitations and
exactly,
lists.
Exactly, lists and memories and glimpses. And we're finally left at the very end of this with this package that was delivered by the postman on Christmas Eve, just that we had seen in the prior act. And this is where the adult Dylan Thomas steps in to speak to himself as a young child and telling him to open this particular gift.
So we've heard about hard boils and toffee and fudge and butter Welsh for the Welsh and on and bright tin soldiers, la-da-da-da-da. Let's listen to, here again, Stephen Libby as the adult Dylan Thomas on stage, Adam Friedman as the young 9-year-old Dylan Thomas, and Margaret Ann Brady as his mother.
Lastly, there was a small packet that postman Tom Tompkins had brought to me, so neat and cold at 7 chimes on Christmas Eve. It lay there, quietly, with its dull brown wrapping and careful block lettering, whispering itself to me. Me, not mother or dad, not Nancy, but to me and myself alone. Master Dylan Thomas,
Thomas.
Number 5,
number 5,
Cwmdonkin
Drive,
Swansea.
Swansea. Shall I open it now? What is it? What is it?
Your future.
What have you got there, Dill? A book? What's the title?
There's no title.
Every book has got a title.
Not this one. Not even words. It's empty.
Let me see.
It's empty.
Empty? Come along, show Mum.
Books were familiar to our house. My father had stacks and stacks of them on tables and in corners. Dark, ponderous books by Keats and Shelley and Shakespeare. Weighty men who bowed the shelves with more overstuffed words in themselves than I ever hoped to digest.
Why, look at that. Not a word.
Oh, wonderful. More from A Child's Christmas in Wales with Stephen Libby, Abbott, Adam Freeman, and Margaret Ann Brady with me in the studio. Playwright Burgess Clark is here as well. And here's the moment. The gift is delivered. The gift is a book with no words. This not in the prose poem at all, but inserted sort of surgically by you so that everything can pivot around his young inspiration.
Absolutely. I mean, the one thing that I was interested in knowing when I started this project was, who was Dylan Thomas? Who was he as a human being? He has this incredibly rich, beautiful language, and I wanted to know where the inspiration for that came from. And so I took a little bit of a dramatic supposition of where he may have begun.
He was not even 40 when he died in 1953, and it wasn't easy. His relationships were not easy.
No, he wasn't.
He toured in the United States for money. He was often nearly broke. I mean, he had this unbelievable, raging gift. Not everybody liked it. Truman Capote called him an overgrown baby who will destroy every last thing he can get his hands on, including himself. and in a sense, maybe he did. You're giving him, in the way you present this, maybe he gave himself in the way he wrote and presented it, a moment's reprieve looking back before he kind of tumbled on down that jum-tumble row of houses.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, Dylan Thomas to me is like so many artists. He's a disappointed optimist. And so his optimism comes through in his writing, particularly, I think, with A Child's Christmas in Wales. And that was what I was interested in really delving into.
Now, sometimes you dip right into the stream of Thomas and you quote him. You've got him in you. But other times, if I'm not wrong, you were sort of doing a simulation of Dylan Thomas here. You were channeling Dylan Thomas, but using your own language.
Absolutely. Well, you had to in order to expand it into a 90-minute piece. And I've been very heartened by the fact that many people who have come to see the production or have read the text have said to me, you know, I had to go back and reference my original poem just to be sure, you know, which was yours and which was his. And I take that as an enormous honor.
He is, Stephen Libby, as you play him, he's clearly enjoying looking back. But there is a kind of solemnness here at the same time, or a kind of, I don't know, almost even a little edge of sorrow in the way you present him. You know, life didn't stay so sweet and humble and pure.
Absolutely. Well, he wrote this piece right at the end of his life, and we're playing it as if I am 39-year-old Dylan Thomas towards the end of his life, perhaps even within months of the end of his life, looking back at the fondest memories of his childhood, but filtering them through his own melancholic personality and trying to find some sort of reconciliation between the two.
Looking back to a stage, a house, filled with family in that early childhood Christmas. Let's get a call from Kathy in Fort Myers, Florida, a long way from a snowy Wales. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hello there. I just found it so serendipitous to get in the car and turn on NPR and find that you were discussing the absolute highlight of my Christmas this year.
Oh, good.
I have sent a copy to my brother with the wonderful anticipation of discussing all the ways that our Christmases mirrored Dylan Thomas's, and with a touch of nostalgia because I feel that our generation may be the last one to really have lived that multi-generational Christmas that you could count on, the auntie behaving the way she always did and the rituals of the food, and one more particularly interesting little piece is when he takes his cigarettes down to the corner and waits for the elderly lady. And of course we don't give those little fake sugar cigarettes anymore because we have a different sensibility about
We're not promoting cigarettes from age 9. But the multi-generational thing, it's so big here. The presence of the aunties, even unnamed aunties in the prose poem, you think that's no longer there, Kathy, the sort of family around the hearth?
Well, I think that is less likely by circumstance. Maybe not mm-hmm. because we don't wish to do that. But, for instance, I'm here in Florida to honor my mother's 91st birthday and be with her while other members of my family with young children who are not able to travel celebrate in Atlanta. And we yeah. are on the phone constantly, and we reminisce, and it's all wonderful, but we don't have the luxury of everyone in the same town gathering together as you so often did years ago.
And you recapture it to some extent through the pages of Dylan Thomas's poem. Kathy, thanks so much for your call. And here's another from our website, Burgess Clark. This is Dan. He says, I saw the show, that's your show, on Tuesday and was blown away. It sent me back to read the original, which is more thin than most of us think. In rereading it, it struck me that Thomas's subject is nostalgia itself. Most of us are filled with longing for the warm, innocent, and protected days of childhood, however we actually lived it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've had many, many people that have said to me, especially young people that are watching this particular production and saying, I can't believe that they all stayed together for the entire two-day period, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Mm. That doesn't happen in my family now. Kids are off on the computer. They're off on the, iPhone. They're off on other things and doing other things. So I think that that is, again, something that everyone is drawn to in this particular production. Everyone gathers together.
The whole family, the extended family, and
Absolutely.
The neighbors and the firemen end up here and on that stage. And but it's funny because, yes, there's nostalgia, so you're looking back and you're vicariously through Dylan Thomas looking back, but what you've added is this piece kind of implicit somewhere in the original of him looking forward as well, of all looking forward about this young person and his potential.
Absolutely. I mean, as the character in the play references, you know, this. What is Christmas? Christmas is a celebration of the birth of a child. And in this particular play, we're delving into the birth of Dylan Thomas, not only as a human being, but also as an author.
Well, this is a great pleasure. We're going to hear more from the staging of A Child's Christmas in Wales by Dylan Thomas. I'm Tom Ashbrook on this Christmas Eve. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Dylan Thomas and his sweet prose poem, A Child's Christmas in Wales, brought to stage. Here he is, the man himself, the poet himself, late in life, which was not too late for him, died at 39. His childhood holidays in Wales are covered in snow. Here he is reading from very, very late. His Christmases are always white, as we hear in this part of the poem.
Our snow was not only shaken from whitewash buckets down the sky, it came shawling out of the ground and swam and drifted out of the arms and hands and bodies of the trees. Snow grew overnight on the roofs of the houses like a pure and grandfather moss, minutely ivied the walls and settled on the postman opening the gate like a dumb, numb thunderstorm of white, torn Christmas cards.
Dylan Thomas, reading from A Child's Christmas in Wales. Burgess Clark has turned it into a stage play with a lot of adaptation going on, A Child's Christmas in Wales, and directed that play. He's with us. Stephen Libby plays the adult Dylan Thomas there. Adam Freeman, the young Dylan Thomas. He's 9 years old and at my elbow. We're joined as well now by Megan Hawks, who plays another creation for the adapted stage play, that is Auntie Dosie. Megan Hawks, thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
And tell us about your character, Auntie Dosie.
I think Auntie Dosie is the kind of aunt that we all hope we have in our lives, or the kind of person we all hope to have in our lives.
She's a little quiet, a little fragile, at the edge of things, but she's really paying attention to
this
boy.
She doesn't miss a thing. She may not say a lot, but she doesn't. She sees everything, and she believes very strongly in young Dylan and his ability to become what he does go on to become. So.
And she gives him, before it's all over, and we'll hear a bit of it, a pretty great gift, and you do a wonderful job in the show with that.
Thanks
for being right there. I can't help thinking about this poet. This is a poet that I dearly love as well. Not everyone does. He didn't go for the intellectual exactly. He was a romantic. He was in love with language, with direct emotion, with a sort of plethora of sensation in life.
Mm-hmm.
And he took his hits for that. But, you know, Richard Burton was buried with a volume of his poems in his casket with him for a reason.
Absolutely.
A fellow Welshman, of course, but even so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the resonance that this man has worldwide is extraordinary. I'd received an email the other day from someone in Japan that had happened to be in Boston and saw the production and was writing to me just to tell me how much they enjoyed it and to see another side of this particular story, which they've been reading for years in their own family holiday.
And yet when you read, I mean, here's just everything you read of Dylan Thomas. The Welsh poet drank hard, died young, and left people wondering why such a gifted writer had been so obviously driven to self-destruction. Alan in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Alan, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you? Happy Christmas Eve day.
Thank you, yes.
Question I have is, did Mr. Burgess or Mr. Perry ever go to the White Horse Tavern on Hudson Street in Greenwich Village, where it's rumored Dylan Thomas had his last Jameson or pint of ale, and try and channel his spirit as he was just before he passed on?
Yeah, yes, his last of, what was it, 19 whiskeys he had that night or something like that?
That's what he's claimed to have. He had claimed to have that, but they've said that they're not sure that he actually had. Yes, there is still some dispute. And indeed, there's still dispute over what ultimately killed Dylan Thomas, because the circumstances were very mysterious.
Alan, is the White Horse Tavern still there?
I believe so. I mean, I had my first drinks there, you know.
So you're channeling. Burgess, how about it? Have you stood?
Of course. I don't think there's any writer in the world that doesn't go into the White Horse Tavern. I actually lived in New York for 10 years, and I was there several times, and would even sit at the same table that Dylan Thomas had sat at when I was there.
At 23, he married Caitlin McNamara. It's described as a spectacularly tempestuous relationship with skyrocket fights, infidelities, 3 children, and frequent inspiration. Let's go to Jillian, calling from Bedford, Massachusetts. Jillian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been avoiding A Child's Christmas in Wales because I had one not so very long after Dylan Thomas himself.
Are you Welsh, Jillian?
I am Welsh. I lived in Cardiff, which is just maybe, you know, 30 miles away from Swansea, where Dylan Thomas was brought up. So it brings up too many memories for me. It's odd for me, of course, to hear how the Welsh becomes Irish when it's done in America. The Welsh accent is apparently hard to catch. But above all, what I wanted to say is, Dylan is an intensely Welsh poet. You know, the love of language, the biblical outpouring, the deep existential despair, the song, and this word that we have in Welsh called hwyl, which is life spirit, enthusiasm. He had all that, but he also had the drinking, which is equally a strong part of my national culture and still is today. And it's sad when you see someone of that talent who's driven between those two forces.
It's sad, but can't you see how he would have looked back, how he did look back in A Child's Christmas in Wales with longing for that youth?
Exactly, for that innocence and that sweetness and that ability to see two paths and perhaps choose the right one. It's sad, and yet it's beautiful. And as I say, for me, it's very hard to read. because it takes me back to when I was a small child, and I look forward to a stocking which had, you know, a pomegranate and a tangerine in it every year.
Yes.
Because fruit was so rare,
right,
in my childhood.
Absolutely.
It's hard for Americans to even think about this.
Oh, no, I know exactly what you mean, and I hear it in your voice, and it's wonderful. You know, I grew up with a Welsh preacher at our church. He was John, but then there was Enid and Sheila and Glynis, and it was very Welsh around us there, and we hear it with you, Gillian. It's great to get your call. Burgess Clark, what about the Welsh when they see what you've done with Dylan Thomas? Gillian's essentially giving you the nod here. She's saying you're on the right beam.
I worked very closely with the Dylan Thomas Society in America when I originally drafted this, because I certainly want to honor Mr. Thomas and his remarkable work. And I've been very, very pleased. I had a gentleman just the other night that said, I've been reading this for the last 40 years. I was actually frightened of coming to see this production because I didn't want to see a different interpretation of the poem. But he said, you've managed to capture the poem in its essence and yet expand it, let it to grow into other ways in a very gentle way that really allow us to appreciate it.
Let's talk with young Adam Freeman. Can you stand up to the mic there, Adam? Oh, thank you. So, do you celebrate Christmas in your house, Adam?
Yes, I definitely do.
And does it feel something, anything, like the Christmas you're celebrating on the stage in this play?
No, not really.
What's the difference?
Well, on the stage, it feels kind of like all humble. At my house, everyone is just everywhere.
Like going this way and that and all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Not just sitting in stuffed chairs, talking knee to knee in close quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy going back and playing, you know, being in a Christmas that was from another time?
Yeah, it was very fun. It was a pretty good experience.
I mean, do you envy that young Dylan Thomas? Would you like to have that as your Christmas, or is it too weird?
Well, I would like it if I had, like, better presents.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? And what kind of direction did they give you? Did they tell you to be, you know, like, an innocent, nicey-nicey boy, or a rascal, or both?
Yeah, I was supposed to be kind of like in between.
Mm-hmm. A little sweet and a little naughty.
Yeah.
You pull that off pretty well. What did your parents think of the show?
They loved it.
I bet they did. I bet they did. You are really great in that role. Stick right with us, Adam. Let's go to Sean in Peabody, Massachusetts. Sean, you're on the air.
Tom, ho, ho, ho. I am so touched by the whole holiday season discussion. I'm 39 years old. I have my first child. He's 10 months old.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Miles Howard, and he's named after my Uncle Howie. And I always remember my Uncle Howie. He was 6'8". He had a beautiful voice, and it was big and loud. And he would sit around the piano with my mother's brothers and sisters and my four siblings. We all would just sing and we would howl, and the relationships were just so extraordinary. And yeah, Holidays bring us to these extraordinary focus areas around,
yeah,
the family and the hearth and these special relationships. It's such a joy for me to experience the holidays and really divide the commercial excess
mm-hmm,
between how we define the heritage and the amalgamation of all of our hopes and dreams and those that can't be with us that we remember
yes,
so fondly,
yes,
during these times. And I know that there's a little bit of a lament and a great deal of joy and extraordinary, powerful hope that you know, we experience when we're with our kin.
It's so potent, and in part just by being a little bit still and just being together without a rush all the time, Sean.
I read The Gift of the Magi every year, and I, you know, we pause and we try to make it poignant, and we try to think about the things that really you know, are so hard to grab in today's day and age that really are part of our human condition. And as much as, you know, we fail in some ways to achieve, you know, all that we want over these few short hours
that
we call the holiday season, I think it is powerful, and I do think that it sustains us along the many months that lie in between. And, you know, I think, you know, this conversation is powerful. I think the thought of of what the holiday spirit can mean for
absolutely. Sean, you're testifying, and we hear the potency right in your sense of what it means. And I'm sorry to rush slightly here, but we want to get – I appreciate your call. We've got one more reading from the play before we go, and it's a wonderful – this is late in the play. The adult Dylan Thomas reflects on the past while the young Dylan and his auntie Dosie look to the future. The play ends with young Dylan considering his future as a writer. Let's listen.
And finally, thus – my child's Christmas in Wales folds its wings as Auntie Dosie, the thin reed of a woman, follows me up to slip me into my small bed, tucked tightly under the eaves of number 5 Cwmdonkin Drive, on our hill that seeped white and silent into the sea.
Auntie Dosie?
Yes?
I have a question for you.
Of course. Yes.
Do you think that I'll write a book one day?
I think that you shall fly with the fairies and sail ships to the moon. Writing of it, well, writing will be the only way that I can go with you, Dylan. You're my window to God.
I looked to her eyes and she was crying. But they weren't tears of sadness. These were tears of camaraderie. Through her tears of perceptive understanding, she looked back at me, smiling. All of a sudden, I was very glad to be alive, and glad for Christmas. At that moment, I believe Auntie Dosie was, for the first and only time I'd ever see her, well and truly happy.
Come now, into bed.
How did you know, Auntie?
Did I know?
I look back now to those days, to that Christmas night, to that single moment when you knew precisely who I was and who I was to become.
Christmas isn't presents and plum pudding. It is a celebration of the birth of a child. Within every child lies your promise. It's all of our duty to children to grant them their possibilities. It is Christmas, young Dylan. It's all of our duty to God.
Leave the light.
What's this? Troubled by the dark. It's another full year before this day spins its fancy again. And what will you wish for next year, young Dylan?
I shall wish for another Christmas, just like this one.
Then tonight you must dream of it, my tender prince. Good night.
Of course, that wish has never come true. There has never been another Christmas like my child's Christmas in Wales. But in my writing of it, we are forever together. All of us in this Christmas of 1923, when we truly lived together, where we were the very best that we could be, that we'd ever be. Within this Christmas, I am forever home. These memories are now silent, excepting the distant voices I hear often in the moment before I sleep. Looking through my bedroom window out into the moonlight and the unending snow, I could see the lights in all the other houses on our hill and hear the music rising from below up the long, steady, falling night. I turned the gas down. I burrow into bed. I hear these voices in the close and holy darkness. And then, at last, I sleep.
Stephen Libby as the adult Dylan Thomas, young Adam Freeman as the young Dylan Thomas there, and Megan Hawkes as his Auntie Dosie. What a wonderful reading. Well, we're so grateful to each of the three of you. And Burgess Clark, I think you got it there. I think you nailed something. I think you got a little bit right there.
Thank you.
An act of imagination, bold in the face of a poet, of an imaginer like Dylan Thomas, to do I wonder what he'd make of it if his ghost could sit and listen in. He must have wondered, too. I mean, you're taking liberties with the man's own history and psyche there.
Of course, of course. And I'm sure, I would hope that he would appreciate the fact that it's being brought to yet another generation, another group of audiences, and that he could appreciate the fact of bringing it alive on stage is really wonderful to see. I mean, it's been such a favorite for so many years that to actually see it being performed, I think people respond very strongly to it.
It's a wonderful production. I hope it comes again. We're grateful to each of you for bringing us this really joyous bit of memory on Christmas Eve. Burgess Clark, Stephen Libby, Adam Freeman, Megan Hawkes, thanks so much for bringing us a little bit of A Child's Christmas in Wales.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, we wish you the very best for these holidays. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Hilary McQuilkin, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby, with help from Suzanne Merkelson and Patrick Rosso. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Merry Christmas. This is On Point.